Good morning, everyone. I think we have a full house this morning. We're very pleased to welcome to our panel this morning Judge Charles Clavert, who is the Chief Judge of the Eastern District of Wisconsin, sits in Milwaukee, served for many years as a trial judge, and also before that was on the U.S. Bankruptcy Court. So we're very pleased to have you with us, Judge Clavert.
Thank you.
We're ready for the first case, Chicago Teachers Union versus Board of Education, appeal number 103396. Ms. Scott.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sally Scott, and I represent the defendant appellants in this case, the Board of Education of the City of Chicago, and the individual named defendants. The case is an appeal of the district court's grant of preliminary and permanent injunctive relief against the defendants based upon its finding of a property right protected by the 14th Amendment. Defendants are seeking to have the district court's order overturned. During the last 20 years, the Chicago public school system has undergone dramatic institutional reforms as a result of legislative action by the Illinois General Assembly, designed to fundamentally change how the school system operates. The legislation has spawned numerous lawsuits as the Chicago teachers' unions and others have repeatedly sought to overturn what the General Assembly has done to reform the school system. In this case, the CTU is challenging two pillars of the reform legislation, local school control and labor law reform. At issue are the principal's right to choose the staff for their schools and the board's right to address the fiscal and operational challenges of the state's largest school system. The first issue before the court is whether tenured teachers employed by the Board of Education of the City of Chicago have a property interest protected by the 14th Amendment to a retention procedure or to recall following an economic layoff. And it is our position that the district court erred in finding such a property interest.
Well, if we find that the teachers don't have a property interest and that the board can conduct layoffs as it sees fit, would the board have any incentive to create the various regulations that were contemplated under 34-1831?
As a practical matter, during this layoff, the board did create rules governing the procedure of the layoff because they did have criteria that they wanted to apply in the layoff. So the board did create rules regarding the layoff.
Was that published and available like the other rules that have been promulgated in regulations when there have been other situations like when a school center closes and that kind of thing? It was very much spelled out. Everybody seemed to know what the criteria were. That wasn't the case here.
Well, the board did pass two different resolutions in June of last year, which did establish that, for example, teachers with non-satisfactory evaluations could be let go. There was also significant communication with the teachers' union about the criteria that would be used in selecting the teachers for the layoff.
Did the board feel compelled to create rules for layoff?
The board did create rules for layoff.
But the question is whether or not the board felt it was compelled, and if so, by what?
The board is authorized to create rules for layoff. I do not know that the board felt compelled to create the rules for layoff by a statutory authority. They are authorized to do so, however, by the statute.
And did the board create any rules for rehire or recall?
They did not create any rules for rehire or recall, no.
And did you feel there was no reason to create such rules under the school code?
That is correct.
Why so?
Because the provision in the school code that refers to layoffs and recalls as an authorizing or an enabling statute, and so it authorizes the board to create or promulgate rules regarding layoff or recall if it so wishes. It does not mandate that they create such rules, nor does it mandate they recall employees.
But if the board does not have to enact these regulations to conduct layoffs, why would the legislature give the board the power to do so and require the board to take into account certain factors like experience, certification, and that kind of thing?
The General Assembly, I believe, was giving the board the maximum flexibility that it could over its personnel decisions, so that if the board chose to have a layoff, the board could promulgate rules and had the authority to promulgate rules regarding that layoff. It did not mandate that they do so.
But it seems to me the position you're taking really flies in the face of what tenure is all about for teachers. If there's no property interest that teachers would have, tenured teachers, I mean, this means that essentially tenure means nothing in a layoff scenario.
Tenure means what the General Assembly defined it to mean. It's a creature of state law. And in this case, the General Assembly did not provide any additional protections or rights to tenured teachers in the public school system. That is correct.
Was it bargained at all, this issue of recall after layoff?
Under the Illinois Educational Labor Relations Act, the decision to lay off is a permissive subject of bargaining, not mandatory. So there is no obligation to bargain over the decision to lay off itself. The impact of the decision is subject to bargaining only if requested by the union. The board does not have to bargain the impact of the layoff unless the union requests to do so. In this case, the record shows the union's testimony was the union did not request to bargain over the impact of the layoff.
So in terms of 3484, which is the tenure guarantee, and looking at 341831, that seems to suggest that teachers' property interests could be framed as an interest in being allowed to demonstrate their fitness for vacant positions as they become available. Why shouldn't we follow that line of reasoning?
Well, I don't believe...
You can't just look at it in a vacuum.
The two provisions are separate and independent provisions, as has already been decided by the Illinois Supreme Court in the case of Land versus Board of Education, that they are two independent provisions. The provision regarding permanent appointment applies to removal for cause, and certainly tenured teachers can only be removed or discharged for cause, and then the procedures set forth in 3485 come into effect. That is a distinct provision from the layoff provision. And when the legislative history of this is examined, prior to the 1995 amendments, tenured teachers did have all sorts of protections in a reduction in force. They had a right to reassignment. They had a right to interim appointments. They had a right to vacancies. They had a right to 25 months of pay before they could be honorably terminated. The General Assembly chose to remove all of those protections from the school code in 1995 to give the board the maximum flexibility over its workforce. So as this court previously noted in Pittman versus Chicago Board of Education, the legislature can remove a property right, and that is what they did here. In the context of a layoff or reduction in force, they removed the property right.
How do you define discharge versus layoff?
A discharge is a termination of employment, usually for some sort of misconduct or for cause, and having usually to do with the teacher's performance or malfeasance. In this case, a reduction in force does not have any sort of similar cause element. It is not the conduct of the teacher that caused it, but some other operational issue, as, for example, a budget deficit or a school closing may cause a layoff. It is not based upon conduct.
Why was the word discharge used in this instance?
The word... I believe the words used were honorably
discharged. But why was
honorable termination
why,
or honorable
discharge
dismissal.
Used?
That word was originally in the legislation in 3484 when it referred to layoff of employees and the rights that they had, and then it said after 25 months they could be honorably terminated. So that is simply a term that is carried over from that statutory provision.
So you were using it merely as a word of art?
Is the word that the public school system uses when it's referring to layoffs as the honorable termination or honorable dismissal to distinguish it from a discharge for cause and to reflect that it was not a result of the conduct of the teacher.
Well, how do you square your position with the MIMS case, which is one of our cases, and it essentially said that although a layoff is less drastic than a discharge and may not require all the procedural safeguards necessary before termination, plaintiffs had a property interest in their continued employment, not just in their status as civil servants.
And it's the sentence that you just quoted, Your Honor, that is how we distinguish the MIMS case. In MIMS, these were film service employees of the Chicago Public Schools, and they were civil service employees. As such, the civil service protections that were in effect applied to them, and they specifically had a right in the rules and regulations of the Personnel Department and the Civil Service Commission they had a right to be laid off in order of seniority, and they had a right to be recalled by reverse seniority. So they did actually have a property right articulated in the rules and regulations. Those property rights were eliminated by the General Assembly in the 1995 amendments. So they were film service employees. They were not tenured teachers. They had a specific property right in the regulations, and so that is why they are distinct from this case, where there is no property right in any rule or regulation or statute here that applies.
The 10-year statute, I mean, particularly the section that says no teacher employed by the board shall, after serving the probationary period specified in 3484, shall be removed except for cause. Your position is that that does not give them a property right. It's not analogous to Sims, because, yes, they were civil servants, but isn't tenure analogous? I understand it's not spelled out in the same way, but it's a similar situation.
I would say it is not, Your Honor, because, again, tenure is as the legislature and the General Assembly define it. And in the context of a reduction in force, they did not define it to give any property right. They defined it to give a property right in a discharge, but not in a reduction in force. And the case law on what creates a property right is so clear about it must be explicitly mandatory language, and the right arises from the rule itself. In MIMS, that rule existed. In our case, it does not.
Now, you said that there were certain regulations promulgated. Were they actually in writing were those regulations promulgated after the change in 95? They were never really spelled out.
Regarding the...
You said that the teachers got notice because they were notified about these fares. But in terms of the procedure to get rehired, that was never spelled out as suggested in that regulation, that the power to promulgate rules establishing procedures regarding layoff or reductions. That was really not spelled out.
The criteria for the layoffs was included in the two resolutions that were passed in June of 2010. There were no recall rights. So there were no procedures regarding recall. That is correct.
Did the district court, as far as you're concerned, declare as a property right in this case when he ordered that they prepare a recall procedure? Did he identify a property right? I know he referred to MIMS and land.
He referred to that. Section 1831 created some sort of retention procedure or a residual property right, but he actually seemed to suggest that the board was required to create the property right by establishing recall rules. So he found a residual property right in some sort of process or retention procedure, but also found that the teachers were not entitled to any particular vacancy. So the property right he seemed to find was the process itself and not to a vacancy. But he also required the board to create the property right, which was, of course, one of our objections, that he was requiring us to create by operation of rule what did not exist by operation of law.
So as I understand, then he's ordering that they exercise their power in order to create a property right?
That is correct.
But the what he identified as the what they had to exercise was actually a procedure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, does the board contend that its power to conduct economic layoffs cannot coexist with the finding that the teachers have some kind of property interest in a recall procedure?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Well, what I mean is it your position that its power to conduct these layoffs doesn't square with the finding that the teachers have some kind of interest in a recall procedure?
Well, I believe that they're two separate concepts. Obviously, the board could create a recall procedure that gave property rights. They are not mandated to do so, nor did they do so in this case. The statute does not create a property right. Although the board could by rule or regulation, it did not do so, and there is no property right in this case.
If we were to find that the teachers have a property interest, does the board contend that no process is due to the teachers?
Well, if there is...
assume we've made that finding. Would it be your position no process is due on the recall, on the rehiring situation?
If they had a property interest
right. Assuming we made that finding.
If they had a property interest, then... as I understand the Supreme Court precedent, obviously, then the question becomes what process is due. We would argue that we've already given them due process by giving them, to the extent the court said they're entitled to display their qualifications, that we've already given them that opportunity.
What meaningful opportunity have you given to teachers to display their qualifications, other than referring them to a website and telling them they can go to a job fair?
Well, the job fairs were exclusively for displaced teachers, and the principals that are the ones that make the hiring recommendations were present there. So the teachers who were there had an opportunity to interview, to have in-depth conversations with principals, and to present their qualifications for employment, which is what Judge Kaur said was the property right they were entitled to. We also gave them the opportunity to submit an enhanced resume on the website, which the principals access when they're looking for candidates for positions. Of the 1,289 teachers who were let go, at the time it was entered into the record in September, 715 have been rehired or retained because of federal funds. So we know that these procedures have been effective.
You're in your rebuttal time, Ms. Scott. Do you want to save some time?
I would like to save some time.
Mr. Geoghegan, can you say your name for me?
Yes, Your Honor. It's Tom Geoghegan. Thomas Geoghegan on behalf
Geoghegan.
Of the, the Chicago Teachers Union.
Thank you. Mr. Geoghegan, you may proceed.
There are three points that the appellee wants to make. First, you cannot terminate entirely the property interest, the employment relationship of a tenured teacher without providing some sort of due process hearing. That is what the Powell case and MIMS said. Powell and MIMS said a mere economic layoff without a due process hearing is okay constitutionally, provided that there is some continuing employment relationship, a right to recall, a right to be reconsidered, a right to appeal, some kind of continuing employment status. Not pay, not a guaranteed job, but some continuing relationship. Then you can have an economic layoff without violating the due process clause. But this is not an economic layoff as defined in Powell versus Jones, which is relied upon by this circuit in MIMS, and which was reaffirmed by the Illinois Supreme Court in the Land case. This is not that kind of economic layoff. This is exactly what Powell said crosses the line. It is a total termination of the relationship. It is a complete cessation of the employment relationship.
So they then, you have not abandoned your claim that the layoff was conducted unlawfully?
Well, the layoff was conducted unlawfully. Of course, that is still our claim. But a lawful layoff, can occur if the teachers are put back in their jobs, put back on the employment status where they can be considered for recall. That's what Judge Kaur did. That's what the district court did. The district court really enjoined the kind of layoff that is impermissible under Powell, the total cessation of the employment relationship, and restored the teachers to their employment status, but they are still laid off. But they are laid off properly within the meaning of Powell versus Jones. They are laid off properly within the meaning of MIMS. MIMS also addressed this. It said, yes, you can lay off these employees, definitely, but they still have some continuing employment relationship. And MIMS relied very heavily on Powell, which says you can't cross the line and terminate them entirely. That's what this is, a total permanent discharge.
Now, who's responsible for that? Is it the legislature?
Well, the legislature is really very clear, Your Honor, about the permanent nature of this right. They create a kind of fictitious story about this legislative reform. What happened in 1995 was Section 84 was simplified, and they took out of Section 84 what had been the layoff procedure and the recall procedure and put them in 1831. What 84 says today is appointments and promotions of teachers shall be made for merit only. Appointments of teachers shall become permanent. Permanent. Subject to removal for cause in the manner provided by Section 3485. There is no reference in Section 84 to the power to lay off. No reference. And that's what led to the Land case, because the teacher said, you can't lay us off at all. The legislature took away the power to lay us off. And the legislature said, no, there's still that power in 3431. But if the legislature is going to use the power to lay off, they have to do it through 1831. That's why 1831, which is the second point we'd like to make, imposes real obligations upon the board. It is a statute that says it's not permissive. It says the board shall have the power if it's going to lay off. And there's no layoff right except in this statute. If it's going to lay off, the board shall have the power to do that. It's an enumerated power. But it has to promulgate rules establishing procedures governing the layoff or reduction in force of employees and the recall of such employees, including but not limited to criteria for such layoffs, reductions in force, or recall rights. The criteria are in the disjunctive. You can have one without the other for layoff or recall. And the weight to be given to any particular criterion. Such criterion, Your Honor, as you noted, shall take into account factors including but not be limited to qualifications, certifications, experience, performance ratings, or evaluations, and any other factors. I mean, the board's quite honest. On the last page of its reply brief, it says, we aren't going to do this. We aren't going to have weighted criteria. It costs too much money. They said in their presentation, Judge, that they have layoff rules. They have no layoff rules except for the one that picks out unsatisfactory teachers for priority in layoff. Otherwise, there isn't a single layoff rule.
Let's get back to 31, though, because the way they read the language, this shall have the power to promulgate rules is not a requirement that rules be promulgated.
That's
under
right.
This circumstance.
And they are not required to have layoffs. The legislature doesn't command that the board lay off anyone.
But it did.
It did.
So, but where's in 31 does it say that they must create these layoff recall rules?
Because otherwise, Your Honor, they have no enumerated power to conduct a layoff. There is no layoff power in 84. It was removed. It was there before 95. It was removed. It's only in the enumerated power section.
So
unless they use 1831, they have no power.
Pardon? Challenging then their right to lay off.
Well, we're challenging not their right to lay off. We could do that because they didn't have any rules in place. But what we're challenging primarily here, Your Honor, is there, and we can pick what we're doing, is the total termination of the employment relationship without any kind of hearing or due process. They can't do that under Powell. They can't do that under MIMS.
So let me just stop because I want to follow this. It's
sure.
Starting out where we're getting back to where we began. So are you then saying that the layoff was conducted unlawfully, or are you sort of saying, you know, okay, we'll let that rest, but the issue is their right to come back.
Your Honor, they
had to be rehired, because that's what the fact that nothing is laid out means it becomes a permanent discharge. Therefore, there's a violation.
Our position is that the layoffs were illegal in that they were total terminations. We did not focus in this case, because it's a fait accompli at this point, what criteria they should have used for the layoff. But they don't have any. Now, they do have a process called Appendix H, which in the past, you may wonder, here we are, the legislation was passed in 1995, here we are in 2011, you mean this case hasn't arisen until then? They have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of layoffs of the Chicago Public Schools over the years for all sorts of reasons. Until the summer of 2011, these were all economic layoffs. These were all economic layoffs where the teachers had some continuing employment relationship through Appendix H. They were all economic layoffs that passed muster in Powell versus Jones, which said, look, there's still some employment relationship, so you can lay off without a due process hearing.
But those, when you look at H, it dealt with attendance centers or programs that were closed, a drop in enrollment, the educational focus did change, so these teachers could not be accommodated in their particular situation, and so that's a difference. That at least that's what the board would say.
Well, Your Honor, as if we haven't gotten into that here, and we do have grievances pending, but a lot of these issues are, for example, they say it's a partial closing and not a total closing, and therefore we don't have to follow Appendix H. We're talking about very legalistic splicing of the line to get out of Appendix H. They didn't want to put people in Appendix H, and they totally fire them. And that's
and
the worst thing is...
You're not arguing that Appendix H applies here.
Oh, we do think Appendix H applies.
So you think the district court was wrong on that point?
Well, we think it was dicta. We never presented Appendix H or tried to enforce it. We said that if they had been put in Appendix H, that would, from the union's point of view and from the members' point of view, comply with due process because there would still be some continuing employment relationship, so that Powell versus Jones would say that that kind of layoff is okay. They still have a continuing employment relationship. So, of course, we were saying, sure, we'd like to have our contract enforced and all that, but we never came into court to enforce the contract. And we don't want to get into the fine details of whether it applies or not. Our position is simple. Look, either the contract applies, they say it doesn't, okay, then for that purpose, we're here in court to enforce the provisions of the code. They have no layoff rules. They have no layoff rules except this one rule that applies to 25 to 50 of the teachers who were fired. No other layoff rules under 1831. They have no recall rules. They have brought back hundreds of people back into their positions. Under what rules? No rules. It's every person fend for themselves. Go to the local principals, try to cut a deal. It's the complete Hobbesian state of nature. You know, it's every person fighting for themselves there. That is totally out of what the legislature had in mind. They had in mind, look, if you read this procedure, what do they have in mind? If we're going to bring down the teaching force, we want the most qualified teaching force remaining. That makes sense, doesn't it? So in terms of layoff and in terms of recall, we are going to emphasize qualifications, certifications, evaluations. We're going to have an objective process. We're going to have criteria. The legislature wants numbers assigned to these criteria. The board, on the last page of its reply brief, says, we aren't going to do that. We don't care what they want.
So essentially what you're saying is the board terminated people without letting anyone know why certain teachers or staff were selected.
Well, generally they followed seniority rules in the collective bargaining agreement. But what isn't clear is who's getting back and why. And what is even more baffling and just completely unacceptable under MIMS is that you have these new hires being brought in off the street. You have qualified teachers with excellent evaluations. They're tossed out. They're fired, never coming back. Meanwhile, new hires are coming in. There are 119 who were brought in from June to August 31st. And the usual numbers are, and we quoted them in the brief, it's something like 780 last year, 998 the year before, 1,400. Why is that happening? Because it's a tough job to teach in the Chicago public schools. University of Chicago Consortium says that of the new hires, and this is an incredible statistic, but it's true, over half are gone within the first 4 years.
Well, let me ask you this. Is the union satisfied with the district court solution, which is to require the board to promulgate regulations pursuant to Section 341831, or is the union asking for something more?
We're asking for more. This is an interlocutory order,
right,
as Your Honor knows. When the criteria are established, we want procedures that are consistent with MIMS. You know, the right to contribute information, the right to contribute valid persuasion, just what the court required in MIMS. May I say one word about MIMS?
Go back for a minute. And the district court said that this promulgation of regulations should be done in concert with the union. That statute that we've been talking about doesn't say anything about bringing the union into it, does it?
Your Honor, as you know, you've been on the district court yourself. The judge was just being practical. He wanted the parties to talk to each other.
Right. So that was more of a signal, not a mandate. Because when you look at the statute, he doesn't have the authority to do that, to mandate that the board sit down with the union and come. Obviously, it would make a lot of sense off to the side if they got together and made such an agreement. But there's really no authority in the statute for that.
We agree, and we're happy to meet on the side, give them our views. In the end, it's the district court that has to rule whether they're complying with the law. And it doesn't depend upon any agreement with the CTU.
Now, the district court also ordered the board to rescind the discharges of the laid-off teachers. If we find that the teachers are entitled to some kind of recall procedure, does it follow necessarily that the discharges have to be rescinded?
Well, they won't have an employment status otherwise. The statute says recall. So you can't have recall of people who aren't employees. So technically, they have to be employees to be entitled to recall rights. And in our interest as a union and individual members, we're here in an associational capacity, not representing them in a collective bargaining situation. It's that they have to be considered before any new hires are brought in, or at least they have preferential consideration over new hires. And that's what has to be established. A recall means that there's still some employment relationship. They have to have some employment relationship to get out of the Powell versus Jones line as to what you can do without a due process hearing and what you can't do.
To be clear, you're not saying the teachers have to be put back on the payroll. You're merely saying they have to change. Their paper status has to change.
Yes. They have to be on, ultimately, a recall list.
In our position here, what property right do we have to identify under 1831?
There's only one property right, Your Honor, and that is in Section 84, which says appointments of teachers shall become permanent.
Right. So you're not saying that the teacher's property interest arises from Appendix H of the bargaining agreement or from 504.2 of the public school manual. You're relying on that statute that grants tenure.
For purpose of this case, that's correct.
Well, what about Section 1831? I mean, that's the one, that's what we're citing, that's what there's, where they say they have certain powers.
Well,
isn't that where the court went? Isn't that what we're looking at today?
It's true, but the court was recognizing that there's a tenure right that underlies everything. And our position is...
Wait a minute. There's got to be a property right, present property right, that we have to, otherwise,
I agree.
Don't go anywhere.
Section 84 says that there is a right to a permanent appointment. I'm quoting from the statute. Appointments of teachers shall become permanent. Under Perry versus Sinderman,
well, that's
under...
that's not rescindable. Then. That's something that the legislature can
right.
do away that can't
it's
change. It's
not rescindable.
Right.
It's
only for people before 1985?
No, it is the existing statute after 1995. There is not a scrap of legislative history from 95 that says that they were taking away the tenure right. And in fact, they removed, I'm showing the current Section 84, they removed the power to lay off that had formerly been in Section 84. Now it's just permanent appointment, period, end of story, dot. There is no qualification for this whatsoever. Permanent appointment means permanent appointment. They have come up and said, oh, you've got to find some other statute that says it's really, really permanent. No, you don't. Permanent appointment means permanent appointment. There's no qualification.
Can't lay them off.
You can't lay them off. And, in fact, there had formerly been a provision in this statute that said you could honor... You can't lay them off without any further employment relationship. We've said, and we agree, you can have an economic layoff, Your Honor, that is consistent with Powell versus Jones, which allows some employment, and MIMS versus Board of Education, this own circuit's decision. Yes, you can have an economic layoff provided that some kind of employment relationship exists because of this permanent appointment language.
So
you can't
then it's
get
not
rid of
enough
it entirely.
For them to just be laid off employees? That's not enough of a connection?
Being a laid-off employee is enough of a connection. Here's what...
I mean, to have them considered I mean, being a laid-off employee is, I mean, would that be enough for you?
Yes, if with a recall right. Here's what Powell says. Discharge is a drastic permanent action with far-reaching consequences. By contrast, a layoff does not reflect unfavorably on an employee. It is not ordinarily viewed as a permanent situation, and in this case, the very statute which authorizes such actions requires preferential treatment as to reemployment and affords alternatives. In our judgment, this is the Powell, which is the leading case, the qualitative difference between layoff and discharge, and this is a discharge that we're talking about in this case, the qualitative difference between layoff and discharge are such that variances in procedure are constitutionally permissible. In other words, if you're going to discharge these people completely, the way the board has done this summer, you have to have a due process hearing. If you're just going to lay them off with a right to recall, then you don't need the due process hearing. That's the due process issue that's before this court. The POW is clear, MIMS is clear, Land versus Board of Education is clear. They all follow this law, and we're asking this court to follow the same law that's in POW, MIMS, and Land versus Board of Education.
Is the due process a property right?
Sure. There's due process itself is not a property right, but
it seems to be where we have to go first.
No. This court has to do is find a property right in the fact that the legislature gives the teachers a permanent appointment under Section 84. And under every Supreme Court case law, under the entire framework of Roth, Perry, Sinderman, there is a property right, even in contracts, much less a statute that gives a permanent appointment. That is the absolute opposite of an at-will employee. And that's what has to be the foundation of the due process clause, and it's the foundation of the MIMS thing. One final point.
I just want to make sure I'm clear because I think semantics matter here and language matters.
Yes.
So you would be satisfied if their category was laid off teachers because you find that distinguishable from someone who's been discharged or terminated.
That's correct.
And
laid off on a recall list.
Right. Laid off on a recall list. Okay.
And given preference over new hires who are being brought in by the hundreds.
But that's part of those rules that have to be promulgated.
That's correct, Your Honor. And those rules give preferential treatment to recall. By definition, recall means recall. So you start with the recall people. You look at their qualifications and so forth. If they can't do the job, sure, then you can go to the new hires. But that's what the statutory framework requires, and that's also consistent with getting out of this problem that Powell and Mims said, which is, how can you have a layoff without due process? Answer, they aren't really completely terminated. They have recall rights. Now the board comes forward and says, and this does get into a semantic argument. That's how they've gotten as far as they have with this case. Oh, well, a layoff is a discharge. It's the same thing, and we're really upheld by the prior case law. Looked at carefully, the case law absolutely does not support what happened here.
So just so I'm clear on this, if we find that teachers are entitled to some kind of recall procedure, it doesn't mean that the discharges have to be rescinded, does it?
It does, because otherwise they have no employment status.
Well, and if they're rescinded, does that mean the laid-off teachers will have to start getting paid?
No,
absolutely
not. Because
earlier you said to Judge Colbert, you were just looking for them to outline get the regulations in order as to how you could be recalled, you get a preference based on seniority, all these other things, and that would be fine with the...
Right. If there's some contract provision like Appendix H that says you get paid, okay. But constitutionally and statutorily, there's no right to repayment, to payment. There is a right to recall, and that right to recall should exist for a reasonable period of time. That's what the statute has in mind.
The recall procedure then does not presently exist.
No recall procedure exists. It is right there in the depositions. We have no recall policy. We have no recall procedure. We have nothing. And in fact, at the very end of the reply brief, they said, well, we can't do what the legislature wants, weighted criteria. It's all too expensive.
Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting also that anyone hired since these layoffs would therefore be subject to discharge so that they can be replaced by a laid-off teacher?
Your Honor, we haven't gotten there yet. Let's see if it's our view that the reason that this case has to be expedited is that the sooner we get these recall rights back in place, teaching positions are coming up all the time. They're kind of irreparable. You know, there's a science position at Gage Park that could really change somebody's life. Let's have a fair process set up for that rather than the current chaos that now exists. Let's end the anarchy down in the Chicago public schools.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gagin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Ms. Scott, 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. One point I do want to make initially is that in their reply brief in support of the injunction, the plaintiffs, CTU, specifically stated on page 6, they were not challenging the original layoff decision, and nor did Judge Kaur issue any decision on the original layoff. So the layoff decisions themselves were not at issue. The issue here is whether tenured teachers have a property right to recall or some sort of retention procedure. And although counsel suggests that permanent appointment is the source of that, they read into permanent appointment all sorts of things that the legislature did not put into it. The legislature specifically took out in 1995 all the protections that tenured teachers had in a reduction in force, removed those protections, and gave the board what has been described by the courts that have already reviewed this, the maximum flexibility to decide their own rules, and more specifically, to decide whether or not they're going to have a recall.
So are you saying the status of being a tenured teacher is meaningless?
Right. I'm saying in the context of a reduction in force, they do not have a property right to continued employment. Section 34...
But does the word tenure, does the status of being tenured mean anything at all as far as the board is concerned?
Again, it means what the General Assembly says that it means. So, for example, tenured teachers can only be removed for cause. They are not employees at will. And if a teacher is going to be discharged, it would have to be for cause with all the protections that apply.
So are you saying that there are still some protections that these now laid-off teachers have?
I'm saying that there are protections that go with the term tenure. These teachers who were honorably dismissed would not, because they are dismissed from the school system, would not have the tenure protections that apply.
If someone is dismissed for cause because they did a terrible job, you read the tenure to mean that it's a permanent position and they have a right. But if they're let go just because of financial reasons, it can be an excellent teacher. They have no property rights whatsoever.
Well, Section 3485 of the school code sets forth the specific provisions that need to be followed when a teacher is terminated for cause. So, yes, the board would follow those procedures. The legislature did not give tenured teachers protections in a reduction in force, and they specifically removed those protections when they modified the school code.
Why would they even enact 31? Why would they even talk about, if we buy your reasoning, why would they even say the board has the power to promulgate rules governing procedures governing the layoff or reduction in force of employees and the recall of such employees, and then give criteria? Why do that? If we follow what you say, this is totally unnecessary. I mean, why would they even go there?
Because they
would have no right whatsoever.
No, they have authorized the board to create rules. So the board is authorized to do so. Here, the board chose not to have a recall. And I would also say that whether or not the board is obligated to create rules under Section 1831 is a state law claim and not a due process claim. The issue here is, does 1831 create a property interest to some sort of retention or recall procedure? That is what George Kaur found. And it does not contain that. Whether or not the board was supposed to establish rules is a state law claim, and specifically it assumes that the board would establish rules that creates a property right when the law is clear. The board has the maximum flexibility to decide what those rules would be and what weight is given to any rule.
All right, I see your time is up. I thank both counsel for their thorough briefs and for comprehensive oral argument. We will take the case under advisement. We realize it's on an expeditious schedule, and we'll keep it on that schedule. Thank you.